Good morning to you. Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks. It's Friday, the 11th day of September 2020. I'm David Ellis, and I'll be with you up until 2 o'clock today. Well, last Friday, we highlighted the poor traffic management that had developed at Warren's in St. Michael after the Ministry of Transport and Works made some changes there the night before. But lo and behold, on Monday night, MTW went back to the area with more paint and restored the situation there to what we consider to be normal. The Minister of Transport and Works, Ian Gooding-Edgell, said that neither he nor the Permanent Secretary was aware about the adjustments before they were made. And he said there is a policy position within the ministry which has been established that, quote, where major works of a disruptive nature are contemplated, then the Permanent Secretary has to be notified. The minister will then be notified by the Permanent Secretary, and then the minister will then make a determination as to whether he can make the decision or if he believes the decision should be forwarded to Cabinet. Now, he said that this situation which had occurred wasn't discussed with him, it wasn't discussed with the Permanent Secretary, and therefore they took the decision, and that is why the team from the MTW went there to make the changes. Now, I could see what happened here. If you had just to go up in Warren's and take some paint and change the markings in the road, would you consider that to be major works of a disruptive nature? If I had to make that decision, I wouldn't consider it major works of a disruptive nature. I didn't have to bring a backhoe. I didn't have to dig up the road. All I had to do was to change some markings. So the person at the center of that decision would most likely have said, well, I don't think that's big enough that it has to go in that direction. You know, the difficulty with it is this. It was a minor change that caused major disruption. Now, how does the legislation address that? If it's a minor change, but it effectively causes major disruption, then I can understand why you will say, well, it has to go here or it has to go. In your wildest dreams, you wouldn't believe that having to change markings would have to get Cabinet approval. So that is where the problem seems to have arisen. So that's one of the things that has been catching my attention. I wonder, there's some other things that I've seen in the newspaper. The situation in Guyana is very troublesome. Guyana has been here as an issue before us for quite some time. And therefore, the fact that we are going through this situation here where there's racial tension which has been rising as a result of these killings that took place, two of them last Saturday and I think two of them the day before yesterday, presents us with a major source of worry in the country. Let's take your calls down to Brass Tacks and welcome to the program.
Hi. Morning, Mr. Ellis.
Morning. Okay. I'm well, and you?
Good. I am pretty all right. Yeah, I've got to get settled in now. I'm up in the battery, so to speak. I'm not accustomed to it in this form. So I am tempted to say a little bit about the road thing, but that was not my thing. My thing is to really just make one or two quick comments and perhaps mainly look at the corona, this difficult area of corona. Okay. First quick comment is Mr. Member of Parliament Prescott. I'm left to wonder if the white shadows have disappeared. And where have they gone? I seem to be a new awakening or something, but anyhow, such is our life. Our experiences. Okay. I would like him to come and say something where the shadows have disappeared or what, if they're still there.
On what basis are you asking that question, though?
Oh, you're not remembering just a few weeks ago when he, some weeks, maybe a little over a month, maybe when he said that there were white shadows deep within the bowels of government, so to speak, that they were operating, you know, behind the scenes and doing different things, causing a lot of things to happen, cause him to get removed and that kind of stuff, you know, because of his Pan-Africanist position.
So what would have happened between then and now that would provoke you to ask him the question of whether the white shadows have disappeared?
Well, I think he's coming back into government, as far as I understand. He's coming back, I think, at a new position. And, you know, he hasn't... I don't think he said anything relative to these white shadows. He blamed for his sort of demise.
So why would you expect him to be saying something now about the white shadows? No. If he spoke just a few weeks ago,
when
he was shifted or taken out of the cabinet, what has happened in Barbados that, in your judgment, would suggest that he needs to speak to that again? The only thing
conscience, Mr. Ellis, conscience. That's the only thing I'm thinking. I don't want to dwell on it. I'm just saying that, you know, conscience-wise, if you're going to come out and make a comment in the public, come now and make another one relative to your new position. But I don't want to dwell on that, Mr. Ellis. Just mention that as a sidebar, so to speak, right? Okay? Next quick thing is the buses, the new buses, the new air-conditioned buses. And, I find it, I don't know how to take it, so it's strange in some ways, because here we are in the circumstances that we're in with this pandemic sort of thing, and we've gone to almost like 30 buses, a lot of buses, and on the road, and air condition in the environment, the COVID environment or corona environment that we're supposed to be in. I wonder if we are doing the right thing and making that move.
How long the buses have been in use in Barbados now?
A few weeks.
All right. And have we had any reports that there's been a spread of coronavirus as a result of the use of the buses?
It doesn't.
Does not appear so, right?
No. Listen to me though first. Actually, just bring me on to the part. I mentioned it's corona. If you want to go on to that.
No. I sticking with the you presented to us. You've said that you have a concern about the introduction of these air-conditioned buses at this time when we have coronavirus. So you are effectively suggesting to the public that the air-conditioned buses are likely to spread the virus.
I'm saying that if there's coronavirus around, it would likely more easily spread within the air-conditioned.
And I'm saying to you that we have had these buses here now for some weeks. People have been traveling on them, and up to now, we have not had any report of any case of coronavirus spread on any of the buses.
Okay,
isn't this ample time for us to have been able to test that?
I don't think so.
You're a doctor? You're a specialist?
Listen, Mr. Ellis, allow me to make a couple
no,
of
No, no, I don't want... I will allow you to talk, but listen, if you're talking something that don't make sense, I have to challenge you. The danger in all of this is that you could go there and whip up a kind of frenzy in the minds of some people that may be unwarranted. So that's why we have to test you.
Okay, I test it. Okay, but I won't be allowing me to go on and just further to develop the corona subject. But you are telling me that there's been enough time, a couple of weeks, is enough time to find out whether or not there's a problem. There could be a problem relative to corona and the your condition buses. I'm saying to you, I'm no medical person. I'm no authority. I'm talking logical. What do you think would be logical talk? And we here in Barbados, we have never had air conditioned buses in that kind of way. But then they were given away to the tourism authority. I think something like that. But we have a healthy environment here in Barbados. Good fresh breeze coming that has been keeping us pretty good. so far, as a matter of fact, so far we haven't seen the presence of the corona spreading within the community here in Barbados. Okay? So I am saying a couple of things that the corona has not been a problem for us, right? And I don't expect it to be, because I don't expect it to be in terms of what's happening here in Barbados. We know it comes in externally. We know that people bring it in. But as long as the guys do their work on the borders, I don't think there'll be any major challenge to the local community. This brings me around to the testing, in terms of testing that we are doing, whether or not the temperature gun is an effective manner of a method of testing for possible spreads, possible having the virus. What do you think about the gun, Mr. Alicia? Do you think it is effective? Do we think we should use it right through the country, or is it not?
Until proven otherwise. At this stage, I have nothing to suggest that it is ineffective.
No, I'm not saying it's ineffective. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, is it very effective? I'm not asking if it is effective. I'm saying if it is an effective instrument, if it is doing a good job, okay? Why does the health people, the Mr. Chapman and those guys, why are there, where these things are being used by some of the bars and restaurants and generally most of the business community, if they're effective, why such a heavy-handed approach by those guys, the health guys, in terms of how they've been dealing with some of these bars, threatening to shut them down? They actually shut it down, and the process is continuing to shut. They were there for several of the St. Lawrence bars and have shut down because of the consistent approach by the health people. I'm not saying they should not be testing or finding out what's going on, but something is wrong. Something is going wrong, Mr. Ellis. We can't continue.
Well, you know, you are the kind of caller who has the potential to be pretty dangerous in the way that you put things together.
Uh-huh.
Because as it relates to the last point you made, you're saying, well, if the guns, the temperature guns are so effective, then why is it that the monitoring unit is saying that there must be full compliance with the protocols? And the answer
to shut down.
And the answer is quite simple.
Mm-hmm.
You have a mix of protocols that are in place to protect people. The reading of temperature is only one of the symptoms associated with the virus. And therefore, they're essentially saying, look, we have to implement all of the protocols at the moment to give us the greatest possible protection, including the important wearing of masks.
Yes, and I'm saying that because...
All right, so I don't understand how you could... I don't know how you could come to this conclusion that because a temperature gun may work, you can float the other aspects of the protocol, that some of which are considered even more important. Because, you know, you may not have a temperature, but you can be asymptomatic.
So
that is understood.
Tell me something about you mentioned asymptomatic.
No, and you're making life exceedingly difficult because of the way that you are just tossing these things up in the air and leaving them. The other point you make about the buses and the air conditioning. Now, remember, there's a tap program in this country which the government has been using, where they have fused some of the coaches with the buses since the collapse of the tourism sector, that the coaches were used in that sector quite a lot. Many of those coaches are air-conditioned, and they have been in use for a longer period than the new buses that came in. So we have had enough time to test this question of whether there can be a spread of the coronavirus via air conditioning in the vehicles.
You asked me if I was medical. You sound as though you're medical in telling me that.
No, I'm going on the basis of time. I am going on the basis of time. All right, and I'm saying to you that if you are raising this in relation to the buses, then you also have to take into consideration that we have also had the coaches in use, and they have been air-conditioned. So on the basis of that, I'm saying to you, we have had enough time to test that.
I do not think necessarily that's so, Mr. Ellis, but okay. I'm saying we've had, you're talking about time, and I'm saying that time we've had, like, a lot of time, it's been a few months. We've had a few months where we have observed how this virus is operating within this country. And we found out that there's no spread in the island. Yet we are taking some very draconian
all
measures.
I can say to you
against the local bars.
That's what you wanted to say.
Just one last comment.
I can just say one thing to you though.
If we keep shutting bars down, Mr. Ellis, you know that the drink manufacturing and those associated things are not likely to.
There are many bars that are still in operation in Barbados. All they're asking for is compliance.
I'm saying let you go belly up. Because
all they're asking for is compliance. Because
the rum, the alcohol, and the various drinks you sell in bars are not going to be moving very well. And you're going to likely cause a shutting down of the industry, the manufacturing industry, exasperating, if you could, I think that's the word, the whole overall situation. We got to be careful about the methods we are using in terms of trying to track this coronavirus. Or lack of it here in Barbados.
That's one side of it. But the other side of that coin is that it is proven in many countries that one of the most significant ways of spreading the coronavirus is through the activities that take place in bars. That when people are in bars, they drink, they talk loudly, and they aerosolize the coronavirus in a big way. So
yeah, but,
we have to take into consideration what you are pointing to, but you also have to balance that against the spread of the virus.
I am also saying also, Mr., that the spread of the virus, this is in my opinion, that is not, that the spread is from the 5, is possibly from more likely to be from the 5G network rather than from...
All right, go along then.
From China, that's how we are.
You go along with your conspiracy theory. I tell you, you're dangerous. One thing I want to tell you that I've discovered today, though, I knew from the days in cricket that not everybody was fit to be an opening batsman. There are some people who deserve to be very, very low in the batting order. And it seems as though you are one of those people who should come at number 8 or number 9. Okay? Down to brass tacks. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, David.
Yes, welcome.
Last Friday, when we had the disclosure about the buses, you made a comment that the Prime Minister was concerned about the purchase of the garbage trucks. You remember making that comment?
Yes, I remember at one stage we had a team that had been dispatched to England, I believe, and that team was summoned back home.
All right. Now, in the light of the disclosure about the buses, don't you think we should have a disclosure about the trucks?
I don't have a difficulty with that. What do you want to find out about the trucks?
If the procurement rules were followed.
Well, it is a valid question to pose.
Okay. Dr. Knight is the chief medical officer, right?
Yes, the substantive holder of the post, I believe. I'm not so sure. I have to check and see if he is still within the service or whether the fact that we have an acting chief officer of health is as a consequence of his leaving the service or being on special leave. I don't know.
Sometimes you see him coming and making press releases and so on. You see him for a day or so, and then Dr. Ford now is to tell he's the acting one. So I don't know it's creating a sense of confusion for me.
Why are you worried about that? Huh?
If Knight is the chief medical officer
acting,
why is this person acting for him? Why Ford is acting for him?
Just let me check. I know some of you guys have a problem with us having to go on the computer and that sort of thing, and all the noise it makes in your ear. But I don't know that we. Now, first of all, you said that, Dr. Knight. I needed to clarify that. The acting chief medical officer of health.
Is Ford.
No.
Knight is the chief acting medical officer.
No, we don't just let me guide you now.
Okay.
The acting chief medical officer is Dr. Kenneth George. All right?
Oh, yeah, George.
Dr. Kenneth George, right? I don't know the background to the movement of Dr. Knight, but...
the person who is acting.
And therefore, he's acting, and from time to time, it seems, when he is not available, then somebody else is also put in the acting role. Understood?
So, what is the position with the chief medical officer? He's on leave, he's retired. What is the position with him?
I have to check on that for you. I'm not sure. But at the end of the day, you know, this is my question to you. And what does it matter to us in this country? I mean, somebody is in the role, whether they are acting or in a full-time position, but somebody is in that role. So why is that so important? Why is it so confusing to you?
All right, then, finally, now, you do a program on education, Dear Sir, or something like that.
Yeah.
Right. Now, the last program we all did, there was a lady from the chief education officer from St. Lucia, and she was responding to queries people in Barbados were being made by persons in Barbados. What is the relevance of that there?
Well, I didn't hear the program that you're talking about, so I cannot address
the question.
Yeah, but I can't address the question of the relevance of what she was saying to the Barbadian situation. This is a question I would ask you. Whether in the answers that she gave, they appeared more relevant to St. Lucia than to Barbados.
Right, all the answers she gave were relevant to
Such
St. Lucia.
Such as? Give me an example.
They have reopened the schools, and she said that the parents come and drop off the children at school. There's a station there for washing the hands.
Okay.
A station for sanitizing.
So that's irrelevant to Barbados in your judgment?
But persons came, and but we want to know what is happening.
No, you guys are a bit too... Sometimes you guys can be really excessively narrow in the way that you see things. On the basis of what you are telling me, I would conclude that this was a question of trying to establish how St. Lucia is dealing with the problem of back to school. And on the basis of that, perhaps how Barbados should look to do likewise. So it is looking at the experience of one CARICOM country and making a comparison. But I mean, for some of you, as long as you're not talking about Barbados exclusively, you could forget it. That don't make sense, because we cannot sit down here and reinvent the wheel. There are other people who got the same problems that we face. Let's hear how they deal with theirs. You know, you don't have no problem when we're importing stuff from Ireland and from New York and them places. So once you're dealing with the Caribbean community, it's a completely different scenario for some of you. So you come across to me as though you're one of those people.
That is not the point I'm trying to make, David.
You tell me where your point is.
We're a few days from the reopening of schools.
And the Minister of Health spoke this weekend.
Huh?
This past, the same weekend that you're talking about, the Minister of Health in Barbados made a statement about the reopening of schools in this country.
But the Minister said that she was going to speak to the parents. She hasn't spoken to the parents as yet.
That is a different point.
But the questions people were raising what responded was going to happen to the, in Barbados?
She responded to a number of those questions. I heard them myself.
The Minister
of Health in Barbados. So while the person from St. Lucia was given the St. Lucia experience, that very weekend, the Minister of Education in Barbados was saying how Barbados proposes to deal with it. I mean, I really don't share that view that you can be so narrow in your perspective on these matters. We need to listen to what is happening in every other CARICOM country and to see to what extent there may be variations on how things are done. You know, we can learn something from other people in the same way that they learn from us. This attitude that we have developed, some people, that, you know, we gotta be so insular, we gotta be so narrow, it is taking us nowhere. We gotta find a solution to every problem ourselves. We can look around to other people in the region and say, well, what have you done? How have you done it? What can we borrow from you? How can we modify? This one makes sense. This one don't really ain't so relevant to our particular needs. And they have to do the same thing with us. That being that narrow is not sensible in my judgment. It isn't at all. And therefore, in that context, I couldn't see anything wrong with having an education official from any other CARICOM country explaining how they are dealing with the issue of back to school in a climate of COVID. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Down to Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, ma'am.
And good morning to listeners.
Yes, morning.
I have two items to put on the table. First, you were talking with the guy about the ASC buses.
Mm-hmm.
You said the courses were tested. But Mr. Ellis, we were on lockdown and none tourists weren't coming to Barbados. We have to wait until the next 3 months to see what will happen. And a lot of people home is not riding on the buses. So you have to wait till the next 3 months and find out what will happen. And another thing, that I was talking to two teachers yesterday and they said they don't know what is going on. There are a lot of things that what the minister talking about, then baffled by it. My next thing now, Mr. Ellis, is the cost of electric batteries including that $20 million?
Which $20 million?
The $20 million that the lady from the transport said that it costs $10 million US, which is $20 million in Barbados for the buses. And George, and the former minister, Edges, said the $45 million project included charging stations and the cost of training. That he said that in August the 22nd in the newspaper in the Nation. So I want to know if training and charging station cost $25 million. Because if $20 million for the buses, $25 went to training and charging.
Mm-hmm.
So that costs more than the buses. So I want to know, I'm here on the ground, that the electric batteries is leased to Barbados. Is that true? Or somebody from the authorities?
You.
No, you can't tell me. But somebody from the authorities could come out and say if all the batteries are leased to Barbados. Hello?
I'm listening.
That's all I want to say. I want to know if it's all, that's what you're hearing on the ground. You're hearing fake news, all kind of news. So you have to hear from the authorities. I don't want you to answer, like, from the other station, because a lot of people playing a lot of wicked keepers. We start spares, and we paying for the buses, too. So we need to know what going... We need to know, too. Not people just want to shut you down and put you on the carpet and think that they rule the stations. The same thing... They wanted to know in the last government, we want to know now too, where all the shut up and hush up things. We need to know what's going on with the buses. If it's a leak, if it's a lease to the government.
No, you know full well that...
I'm talking about you station, I'm talking about another station.
You know full well...
With the keepers. one rule the station.
When the Transport Board's representative was on the air last week, she made it clear that the buses were not leased, that they have been bought. You have raised another question, which is whether the batteries have been leased. So I can't answer that. Somebody could send me a note and tell me what it is. You don't have to come on air for everything, but you can always keep me posted by just sending information to us at our WhatsApp number. And just to remind you what that number is so that you will be able to get the information to us as quickly as possible, it is 266-4862. 266-4862. Down to brass tacks. Thank you, ma'am. Welcome to the program. It's 10:34. Hello.
Good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, morning.
How are you today?
I'm well, and you?
I am blessed. I am here with a complaint of National Insurance Answering Service, I can call it. From Monday, was calling, and hours on the phone, just listening to the play that got there. Your service is this, it will be soon be answered, and over hour, I get no answer.
Well, it's poor service. If that's what you've gotten, that's poor service.
It's very poor, so mm-hmm. I decided, well, I can't take it no more. I can bring it to your highlight, or the station highlight, where someone will look into it.
In many areas, the government of Barbados is striving to improve the quality of service to the public. And we all agree that when it comes to NIS, a lot of work still needs to be done there. One can appreciate that they're overwhelmed because the government says, well, now they're approaching 40,000, some 37,000 people or so, 37,000 people who are unemployed. And that must exert tremendous pressure on the NIS, which had difficulty responding in even better times. So, you know, there's got to be this ongoing desire and effort to try to improve the situation, because you need to tell me as a person out there requiring the services of the NIS,
well,
how does that leave you feeling?
Well, again, in my position now, where I'm past the real age, I think you understand that real age.
Was that retirement?
Pension. Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. So you're sitting down waiting for your pension. How long have you been waiting for it now?
Well, what happened was on invalidity benefit first. Mm-hmm. So it changed over within the last 2 weeks. And the invalidity sent it a little bit, but not a friendly pension.
So the pension provides you with the bulk of what will sustain you.
Right.
And you have had no pension so far. All you've had is invalidity.
Right. Yes, sir.
So your call to them was to find out when are you likely to get the money?
Right. Or if I have to come in to do something that the changeover will go through freely.
Yes. And, you know, that's an important point. You may not necessarily be asking them when the money coming. But if you have to do something else to make it to ease the flow,
right? Any bridge to cross?
I don't know. NIS, if there's a way that you can fast track people like this, let me know. I mean, I'm willing to help get that information to the people so that, you know, they can get an easier path to accessing information from the NIS. That's really what they want. And everybody doesn't want to bombard you with a call as to whether the money coming next week.
Directly, sir.
Yes. All right, sir.
Second mm-hmm. point. Mm-hmm. People is keeping noise, finding fault of the air conditioned buses. So far, I see no fault. As you said, when the pandemic started, we still had tourists in air-conditioned coaches, and we didn't hear about anything. So why we were shut down, we started out, and 99.9% of people that traveling in the transport board air-conditioned buses is locals, and we do not have it transferring locally. So I don't understand your first caller position. Okay, sir.
You do have a good day. Hello? Good morning. Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks.